Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Chaotic Corgis by Mildred Abbott, narrated by Angie Hickman. 1. An earthquake rumbled the bed, shaking me awake. I stared at the ceiling, which was neither rumbling nor shaking. Not an earthquake. Obviously, Colorado wasn't prone to earthquakes. Of course, neither was Missouri, where I'd moved from 8 months before, so who knew why I thought I was in the middle of an earthquake. The bed shook again, but there was no rattle of dishes nor trembling of walls. I glanced over to find two red, pointy fox ears poking over the edge of the mattress, accompanied by a wet, black nose. Okay, kind of an earthquake. Watson chuffed, pounding his front paws on the edge of the mattress, and snorted. I rolled toward him. "You're making some very ungentlemanly noises this morning." He snorted again. As I reached out to pat his head, I glanced at the clock, then glared at Watson. "Seriously? 5 in the morning? He cocked his head as if determining whether I had a valid point. Apparently I didn't, as he chuffed again and smacked his front paws on the bed once more. I couldn't help but laugh and gave in to petting him. "You know, if you were an inch taller, you wouldn't get away with such shenanigans. But waking up to nothing but pointy ears and an adorable dog nose isn't a half-bad way to be disturbed. Better than an earthquake, at any rate." Watson gave a quick lick on the tip of my nose, pushed off the side of the bed, plopped down on his little corgi legs to the wood bedroom floor, and then trotted over to the doorway to look back demandingly over his shoulder. "You know, I need to teach you how to make breakfast." I looked at the clock again, considering. I could ignore him, shove pillows on either side of my head and drown out the world until the alarm went off. But he had given me puppy kisses on the nose, a very un-Watson thing to do. I supposed I should reward such affection, even if it was complete manipulation. Plus, the quicker I got out of bed, the quicker I got coffee. Within a few minutes, the nectar of the gods was brewing, filling the small kitchen of my log cabin with a cozy aroma. I fried eggs over the mint-green oven that came straight from the 60s, while the faintest crack of dawn filtered through the lemon-yellow and lime-green tie-dyed curtains with pink flamingo pattern all over them that came straight from my mother and hippy-dippy stepfather. Watson sat at my feet, staring expectantly. If a person had to wake up before the sun, this was the perfect place to do it. Finishing up cooking, I prepared plates for Watson and myself, then glanced at the clock again before smiling at Watson. "We're having breakfast on the porch this morning." Watson trotted along behind, chuffing irritably every so often as I gathered up a blanket and book before settling onto the driftwood bench and lowering Watson's plate to the floor. Though it was July, the morning was cool and crisp. Surrounded by a forest of pines and aspens, with the Rocky Mountain peaks towering overhead, I snuggled into the blanket and propped the book on my lap as I ate. No, not a bad way to wake up at all. "Revenge is a dish best served cold. I warned you weeks ago." I glanced both ways on Elkhorn Avenue, and since the light at the intersection was red, I jaywalked with Watson through the bumper-to-bumper summer traffic. Once safely on the other side, I addressed my corgi again. "Well, mister, it's cold and it's time." One of the many tourists crowding the streets of downtown Estes Park offered a wide-eyed stare from over their triple-scoop ice cream cone and then gave me a wide berth. Another, apparently not thrown off by me having a conversation with my dog, bent down with a flourish to pet Watson. Watson flinched, huffed, and backpedaled to take shelter beneath my brown and pea-green broomstick skirt. The man straightened, looking offended. I attempted an apologetic shrug. "Sorry about that. Watson's a little particular who he lets pet him." The man's expression soured further, and then he, too, gave us a sizable distance and disappeared into the hordes. I suppose that sounded insulting, though it was true enough. Watson was finicky at the best of times, but the endless number of people at the high-tide tourist season made him even grumpier than usual. Watson poked his head out from under my skirt, saw the coast was clear, and emerged once more, leaving a cloud of dog hair rising between us. Cutting his way through the tourists' feet, he attempted to lead me to Cabin and Hearth, the local upscale log cabin furniture store. "Oh, no, no fancy dog bones for you." I pointed to the shop next door when Watson glared back at me. "Revenge, remember? It's time for you to pay up." Proving his senses were spread thin, Watson followed me easily for a few steps until we almost reached the door of the pet shop before he balked and demonstrated just how powerful his tiny legs were by pulling me back in the direction of the cabin store. "Watson?" I'd been unprepared for his sudden jolt and was actually maneuvered a few steps away before I managed to get a better grip on his leash. His pointy ears drooped partially, not to the level of a full-blown apology, but enough to play up the cute factor. "Nope, not gonna work. You've had this coming." I snapped my fingers and pointed for him to come to my feet. He considered. Watson was my pet. I was his master. That was how the pet ownership gig went. However, in true stubborn corgi nature, Watson wasn't overly convinced of that fact. Honestly, neither was I. To my surprise, with a huff, he lifted his nose in the air, saving face, and trotted over to sit at my feet. "Good boy," I attempted to not let my astonishment show. Better for him to think there wasn't another option, even if we both knew better. "If you fight against this, it'll just take longer." Another tourist bumped into me, muttered an apology, and kept going. Since moving to Estes Park, I'd been looking forward to tourist season getting into high gear. But now, though I was enjoying the mild summer weather in the Colorado mountain town, I realized I shared a bit more of Watson's grumpy old man personality than I cared to admit. I turned back toward the front door of Paws, but a movement from the shop's window caught my attention, and I leaned a little closer to look inside. Through a slight glare, I saw a couple embracing in the middle of the store. They were indiscernible. The woman had her arms thrown around the man's neck as she stood on tiptoe, her long fall of blonde hair swinging at the movement. Maybe Watson would get his reprieve after all. I didn't want to walk into the middle of that. Just as I was about to pull away, the man lifted his face, and his eyes met mine. I gave a little jolt. It was Polly Mertz, the pet shop owner. Not seeming the slightest bit thrown off by being caught in the hug, he beamed, lifted one hand from the woman's back, and motioned for me to come in. I hesitated, then gave a nod before looking down at Watson. "You have some kind of magical powers, don't you? You're already paying me back for doing this." Clearly over me, Watson didn't bother to acknowledge my words, but he followed toward the door without any more struggling. I took a steadying breath before going inside. Over the past month or so, I'd made a more active attempt at being Polly's friend. He'd even hung out with Katie, Leo, and me on a few different occasions. Though there were times he was off-putting and awkward, I truly had begun to care about him. However, he'd retained that platonic, nearly eunuch-like position in my mind. The thought of being in the same room with him and a lady friend was akin to walking in on your grandparents in a compromising situation. Just, ew, and no. When Watson and I stepped inside, all such thoughts vanished at the instant cacophony of barking and howling. The commotion set off the screech of birds from somewhere in the back. Polly's two corgis, Flotsam and Jetsam, tore from the other side of the shop, stumbling over each other in their haste to get to Watson. Once more, Watson took shelter beneath my skirt, and, not for the first time, my body doubled as a corgi playground, or corgi cage fight arena, depending on which one of the participants you asked. Bending down, I took hold of the red one's collar, Jetsam, if I recall correctly. Even as I pulled him away from Watson, he wiggled and squirmed while simultaneously bathing my forearm in slimy kisses. Not worth it. Most definitely not worth it. This was more of a revenge on myself than Watson. "Fred," Watson. Polly hurried over from the woman and wrapped his thin arms around me in a friendly embrace. So nice to see you. What a pleasant surprise. I attempted to return the hug while snagging the tricolor's collar, but only managed to set Jetsam free once more to barrel back beneath my skirt. Polly, I blew out of breath. A little help, please?
Oh, of course.
He released me, clapped his hands, and cried out cheerfully as if there was no skirmish at all beneath us.
Boys, snacks.
Then he hurried over to the counter. The corgi shenanigans didn't falter until they heard the crinkling of a plastic bag being opened, and then Flotsam and Jetsam tore out from underneath my feet so quickly one of them nearly took my skirt in his haste to get to his master. There was a giggle from across the room, and I looked over to see the curvy blonde grinning at us. So cute! I'd forgotten about her. Forgot about everything, as one does when about to become a double amputee. Yes, adorable. I lifted my skirt slightly and peered beneath. Watson glared, making it clear I was going to be paying for this for days. Most definitely not worth it. Flotsam and Jetsam had wandered off with their treats, and typically they didn't bother Watson again after that. The duration of the chaos seemed to lessen with every interaction between the three dogs, though not the intensity. I kept waiting for the two of them to remember that my little man was nothing more than a grump and was never going to play with them the way they wanted, but they were tenacious. Although I supposed it had worked well for their father, who'd been equally, if not more subtly, determined to strike up a friendship. Polly came over once more and held a dog bone toward my feet. Sorry about that, Watson. They just love you, that's all. Watson deigned to sniff at the dog treat, but then proved just how offended he was by retreating once more. Well, you can have this whenever you want it. Polly bent a little farther, and with his true lack of social awareness, shoved the dog bone beneath the hem of my skirt before standing once more. They really do love him. I know they do. I attempted a smile. Sorry for the disruption. I wasn't trying to intrude on anything. I flicked my gaze toward the woman. Though Polly looked confused, the blonde hurried over and extended a small hand in my direction. Oh, not at all. Don't ever be sorry for such a cuteness overload. I'm Melody. I shook her hand, but before I could offer my name, loud crunching sounded from beneath my skirt. It seemed Watson was getting over his offense. Cuter and cuter, the woman giggled as she pulled her hand away and then gave Polly a quick squeeze. And you're not interrupting. Polly was just making my dreams come true. Unable to stop myself, I glanced at her ring finger. Sure enough, a large diamond glistened. I hadn't even realized Polly had been dating anyone.
Don't you mean Ethel, Beatrice, Cinnamon, Angel, Leroy, Finnegan, and Sherbet's dreams come true?
Polly winked at the blonde. They're one and the same. Their dreams are my dreams, just like you are with your boys. She gave him another squeeze before grinning at me. And like you are with your cute little one, I'm sure. I started to nod in agreement, then paused. You know, I think I'm missing something.
Come here. I'll show you.
Polly took my hand and led me to the far side of the store. As his shelter moved away, Watson picked up what was left of his snack and retreated to a corner.
Melody just purchased the Cat Castle Deluxe.
Polly practically vibrated with excitement as he gestured toward the structure that took up a good 15 feet of the wall space. I'd seen cat trees before, but this was like 100 of them put together. Cylinders, ladders, towers, ropes, and wheels were all jumbled together to form the shape of a castle. I had to admit, it looked like fun if you were a cat. There were a couple of hammocks dangling between different turrets, and little nooks and crannies that led to secret passages among the sections. To top it off, a large dragon by the drawbridge appeared to be made out of the material cats like to scratch. Suddenly, Watson's moody disposition and treat obsession seemed relatively easygoing. Wow, that is
something.
Isn't it? The kids are just going to love it. Melody stared at the contraption with the gaze of a lover. I've been wanting it since Polly got it in a couple of months ago, but couldn't justify the expense. But our anniversary is coming up, so I figure my husband and I can afford the splurge. It finally all clicked into place. She and Polly weren't having some secret affair that had just ended with an engagement. He'd simply made a big sale. Wow. And to think I prided myself on my deductive skills. So, I thought back, Ethel and Leroy must be your cats? Yes. She nodded and began counting them off on her fingers. Angel, Beatrice, Cinnamon, Ethel, Finnegan, Leroy, and Sherbet are our babies. I gaped at her. Seven? You have seven cats? Melody nodded again, her pride obvious. Yes, all Persians, and all with prestigious pedigrees. Persians? Seven of them. Wow, and here I thought my life was ruled by pet hair. She chuckled. You just have to stay on top of it. Her bright blue eyes flicked toward my cream-colored peasant blouse, doubtlessly finding multiple examples of how I was very far from staying on top of it. It helps if you carry around a lint roller. Yes, I suppose it would. I have one in the glove compartment of my car, but honestly, I've given up. If you can't love me with dog hair, you can't love me at all. I agree with you on that one. Polly gave the cat castle an affectionate pat before turning back to me. It's unusual for you to bring Watson in lately. Did you come for something specific or just to say hi? I'd nearly forgotten. Oh, right. I glanced over at the corner where Watson had finished his snack and was now snoring in the afternoon sunlight. Based on only hearing the soft chirping of birds, squeaking of rodent wheels, and gurgling of aquariums in the background of the store, I assumed Flotsam and Jetsam were napping as well. Maybe Watson would let go of his grudge earlier than I feared. I wanted to get a 4th of July outfit for Watson. I thought the tourists might enjoy my little mascot looking like Uncle Sam or something. Before Polly could respond, Melody sucked in her breath. Oh, that's how I know you. You're Fred, right? The lady who owns the Cozy Corgi bookshop. You have the best bakery in town. Yes, I am, and thank you. I smiled at her, pleased. Although the bakery part is owned by my best friend Katie, I can't take any credit for that, but I have to agree. I think she's the best baker I've ever met. The pretty blonde patted her flat stomach. My husband and I came in a couple of times when we moved to town in January, but now it's a rare occasion. We try to be healthy. I was surprised I didn't remember seeing her in the shop. Though since opening the bookstore, there'd been many times I'd been pulled away with events a little more pressing than books and pastries. Be that as it may, Katie and I both appreciate your business when you and your husband decide to indulge. Her blue eyes brightened. That's not a bad idea. If we're splurging on the cats for our anniversary, I suppose we should splurge for ourselves as well. Maybe we'll come in and pick up a cake or something from Katie. A small one. I'm sure she'd love that. I returned my attention to Polly. Watson and I can wait if you want to finish up with Melody. There's no rush. Oh, no, you go ahead. Melody jumped in before Polly could respond. Once I come in here, I stay forever. There are just so many fun and adorable little cat toys to choose from. Jared and I, he's my husband, try to be sensible and not go overboard, so it always takes me a while to choose which one I want to get. She gave the cat castle a pat of her own. This is a surprise, and I won't pick it up for a few more days, so they need a little something to tide them over in the meantime. I wasn't sure how the cat castle could ever be qualified as sensible, but I was glad for Polly that he seemed to be making what was surely a substantial sale. All right, then, if you're sure, thank you. I insist, and your little one is going to look absolutely adorable as Uncle Sam. She waggled her fingers toward a sleeping Watson, and then got lost to the selection of toys. Polly slid his arm through mine as we walked over to the dog section.
You must have a death wish. I thought you said Watson would murder you in your sleep if you ever tried to put an outfit on him.
It's payback, and I told him it was coming. Remember my birthday cake?
He chuckled. Oh, yes. I suppose he does have some payback coming.
Katie had thrown a birthday bash at the bookstore when I turned 39 at the end of May. Just as she'd been about to cut the cake, Watson displayed one of his rare feats of athletic ability, bounded onto a nearby chair, then the countertop, and helped himself to the first bite.
In his defense, you said yourself you hadn't given him any snacks all day. He was desperate.
I leveled my gaze on Polly. It wasn't like I starved him. He had breakfast and lunch. I just hadn't given any snacks. I knew he'd get a boatload during the party, if nothing else from all the crumbs people would drop on the floor. There has to be a line somewhere, or he'll be the size of Flotsam and Jetsam rolled into one. As we stopped in front of the section of dog outfits, I began to second-guess myself. Revenge or not, trying to stuff Watson into a full-body hot dog suit really was inviting my own murder. Chickening out, I reached for a tiny red, white, and blue top hat that had strings to secure under a dog's jaw.
How about this instead? A compromise of sorts.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
He plucked the hat from my hands and checked the label.
However, this is more for a dog the size of a chihuahua or a toy poodle.
Polly bent forward and shuffled through the other outfits.
I don't have the right one for a corgi, but I can order one. It could be here by the third. Would that work?
I probably shouldn't mess with it. Even with the hat tied on his head, it was highly doubtful Watson would leave it alone for more than 5 minutes. But it really would be cute. Maybe I could get him to leave it on long enough for a photograph in any case.
Yes, that would be great, thank you.
Polly sucked in a breath. I have a great idea. Are you guys still coming to my softball game that afternoon?
We are. Katie and I are leaving the twins in charge of the bookshop and bakery.
We debated about the intelligence of leaving our new employees for the first time unassisted on what was destined to be one of the busiest days of the year. But it had seemed so important to Polly that we attend, we couldn't turn him down.
Awesome. I wasn't going to join again this year. But since Declan's not part of it any longer.
Polly's eyes widened.
Crap. Probably shouldn't say things like that.
I patted his arm.
You're okay, Polly. Declan was horrible to you and several others. I'm glad you're trying it again. Between that and the Bird Club, your social calendar is getting pretty full lately.
Yeah, it is.
His smile was so bright that even with his yellowish teeth, it was a thing of beauty.
He sighed contentedly. Anyway, I know you need to get back to the bookshop. I'll order a Statue of Liberty hat for Flotsam and a Betsy Ross hat for Jetsam. It'll be perfect.
2. The slice of prime rib was the largest I'd ever seen. If the dining room of Pinecone Manor wasn't dripping with upscale mountain chic class and romantic ambiance, from the portion size, I would have assumed it was one of those restaurants that if you eat an entire cow within the hour, you got your meal for free and had your picture hung on the wall. The same was true of the baked potato.
I've wanted to eat here for ages. Thanks for giving me an excuse.
Branson Wexler tipped his glass of red wine my direction and took a sip, his bright green eyes sparkling as his gaze stayed on me.
It's delicious. And you don't have to choose between quality or quantity.
I refocused on my dinner. The center of the meat was a little rare for my liking, though I knew that was how prime rib was supposed to be served. I cut around it and pushed the portion to the side before moving on to a more well-done piece.
Is it too gamey for you? The flavor of elk can be an acquired taste.
Right. Elk. So in this case, it would have been one of those restaurants where you ate an entire elk and you got your meal for free.
No, I got used to all the different types of meats when I'd come up to Estes to visit my grandparents and uncles as a kid. I'm just going to save that little bit for Watson.
Branson practically sputtered and chuckled.
You are something, Winifred Page. I've had dates refuse to eat their meals saying they'd rather have a salad because they were watching their weight. But I've never had a woman save the best part of her dinner for her dog.
I gave an exaggerated shudder. Salad? You know me better than that. Even if I did have that disposition, Katie baking all day above me would have ruined that ages ago. Why settle for salad when you can have fresh pastry goodness and prime rib? I poked at the bloody center cut. But I also want to keep the peace. Watson's still irritable about me dragging him to the pet shop yesterday, and my leaving him home tonight will only add to that. An offering has to be made if there's going to be any reconciliation.
I should have picked a restaurant that was dog-friendly, but I wanted tonight to be special.
He slipped his hand inside the inner pocket of his suit jacket, pulled out a little box, and placed it on the table between us.
I was planning on giving this to you for your birthday, but it wasn't ready in time. And then...
He shrugged.
Well, the timing hasn't felt right since.
For one terrifying, heart-stopping moment, I stared at the tiny box, my blood running cold. There was a ring inside. He was proposing. Holy Lord, he was proposing.
Fred.
Branson reached across the table and placed his hand over mine. I continued to stare at the velvet trap, gift.
Fred.
He squeezed my hand as he repeated my name and smiled gently when I looked up at him.
It's not a ring.
I glanced back down at the box and then at Branson once more. It wasn't a ring? Not a proposal? Of course it wasn't. Am I that obvious?
As wide as you went, you were either thinking I was getting ready to ask you to marry me or I'd hidden a bomb in there.
He chuckled again.
And with the tenacity and speed that you've been solving murders, I don't think a bomb would scare you that badly.
I swallowed, trying to get my nerves to resemble that of a normal human being instead of Polly's hyperactive corgis. I'm sorry. I hope it's not insulting. It's just that...
Fred.
Branson squeezed my hand again.
I think you're having the appropriate response if I was really going to propose right now. That would be a little out of the blue, don't you think?
It most definitely would have been. Not to mention insane, ludicrous, and absolutely terrifying. But with the initial relief of knowing that I wasn't about to endure a marriage proposal, a sliver of irritation entered, though I tried not to let it sound in my voice. In my defense, you brought me to the most romantic restaurant in Estes Park, the one they literally advertise as the place to propose to your girlfriend, and told me to get all dressed up. I motioned down at my body, though most of it was hidden by the table, which required me to go shopping at Silk and Satin to get a new dress.
You look stunning, by the way.
His thumb moved over the back of my hand, and his voice dipped to a heated purr. Thank you. That's not the point. I waved him off even as I was flattered at the compliment. Katie had taken me dress shopping, demanding I go outside my comfort zone and get something more form-fitting and in another shade than my typical earth tones. Considering the amount of pastries Watson and I had been consuming over the past few months, I had to admit, though I was rather surprised, it was a good look on me. Not that I was about to trade my broomstick skirts and cowboy boots for designer labels and high heels, but still... You tell me it's a special occasion, and then you put a ring-sized box on the table. What was I supposed to think?
Well,
his handsome smile curved to something slightly wicked.
I am hoping this is a special night. We've been dating for a while.
My pulse rose nearly as much as it had at the sight of the dreaded ring box. It seemed Katie had been right. Pinecone Manor was not only the most romantic restaurant in Estes Park with the best views, but also a bed and breakfast.
Even though I told her she was crazy,
part of me had known, even if I didn't want to think about it. I supposed Branson's expectation or hope wasn't unfounded. We had been dating, going on dates, rather, regularly for several months. Most other couples would have crossed that bridge a long time ago,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?